Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
I think we should move on to our lightning round of news.
Dude,
what? No?
You just asked me to piss off every automaker of like, who's not going to survive the next 10 years? And then you dodge the question.
I didn't ask you to say that at all. I just asked for your thoughts. You went off. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show from Inside EVs all about the future of transportation. I'm Tim Levin.
And I'm Matt Hogan.
On this week's show, we're doing something a little bit different. We're going to dive deep into all the EVs that have been canceled, why that's happening, what we think is going to happen next. And then we'll have a little lightning round at the end of a few news items from the week. So let's dive in to this week's news. This has really kind of become hard to ignore. Not that we've been ignoring it, but it's just like the number of different pieces of news about different cars getting canceled or delayed has just added up to the point where I think it's worth looking back at all of these decisions and kind of seeing what we can say about it as a whole, seeing what cars we think maybe deserved to get canceled, what cars didn't, which cars we think might be coming next, just purely based on our own speculation. I mean, the reason we're talking about this is just in the last week or so, we've seen the end of the Volvo EX30 in America, end of the Hyundai Ioniq 6, the non-N, like souped-up hot version. We saw Honda cancel all of its future EVs that were going to be built in America. So for starters, Mac, I mean, those are some examples. Why don't you bring people up to speed? Like, what is going on here and why? Why are we seeing so many EVs get canceled?
Yeah, so I think you're right. We haven't been ignoring this story, but we've been covering each individual tree, and now we're stepping back to look at the forest, right? Because a lot of this is driven by the fact that, you know, end of the tax credit comes in the end of September. A lot of uncompetitive EVs are staying competitive by the money on the hood, right? And then offering super aggressive lease deals. And then the bigger component, I would argue, is the regulatory rollback in the United States, where car companies had relatively ambitious targets of what their fleet average fuel economy was going to be. And in order to hit those targets, which were averaged like pretty high and to the point where it was not going to be possible to meet these without a significant mix of EVs. And the Trump administration rolled that all back. They're in the midst of, you know, rolling back the ability of California to set its own standards. We'll see
That's
how that shakes
one,
out.
Because that was like you must sell this many EVs each year. California has always been a huge driver of this. California plus all the other states that follow those exact rules. So like when the California stuff went away and car companies are like, oh, actually, I don't have to like sell exactly this many EVs, it stands to reason they start looking at their portfolio and they're like, all right, which ones of these do I not want to sell anymore?
Right. And I think people don't realize like when you look at like all of these weird, super low volume, low range EVs that you think about, like, I don't know, the Honda Fit EV that was only ever leased to people, or the two generations of Toyota RAV4 EV, or a lot of these like 2010s era EVs that predate the modern ones, Honda Clarity EV, other things, existed because California actually did have a zero emission vehicle mandate where you had to at least offer something in that segment, a zero emission vehicle, some of which were hydrogen, some of which were EVs.
Side note, I'm going to interrupt you again. Side note, we were just talking before this about how we were talking about super cheap used EVs and like what you can actually get right now. And I was looking on Craigslist yesterday, speaking of the RAV4 EV, Northern California is probably like the only place where they exist, apart from Southern California.
Yes, I saw one sitting out in a dealer lot like 2 days ago.
I see them every once in a while. You need to charge it. You need this like crazy like suitcase looking thing to some kind of electronic doodad that like makes actually allows you to charge it. But anyway, this guy on Craigslist was selling one for, not that it was like $5,000, and he was like, oh, and I'll also throw in another non-working one for parts.
Classic.
I was like, okay,
love that guy. Let's have him on
so
the
let
pod.
me know yeah let me know if I should especially pull the trigger on this.
Absolutely.
On these two.
Put it on the corporate card. EVs. I'm sure they'll. Yeah. Don't ask the bosses. Anyway, and I think, you know, first off, I want to say that a lot of this has been framed in the world of like a retreat from EVs. And I think for a lot of companies, that is true. But it's worth remembering, like, even in a rosier EV transition, even in a world where the market is working well and regulations are pushing us towards these, I think a lot of this was always going to happen. I mean, the first products you put out in a new category are generally not the most competitive or well-positioned cars, right? Like, or well-positioned products in general. I once compared about how, like, you know, the iPhone, the first iPhone didn't have an app store. But if you zoom out to the whole smartphone industry, that was when, like, Windows Phone existed and Palm had its own WebOS, which now is forked over and only powers TVs and stuff. There was all these like weird ideas of like, maybe this works. And, you know, mm-hmm. the only way, you can't have trial and error without the error, right? And so in general, when you have 100 years of doing things one way and then you start doing things a different way, you're not going to nail every decision on that decision tree in the first try. Like, perfect example is the Mercedes EQ cars, where they're just like, it's not anything necessarily wrong with EV technology. It's that they are shaped like eggs. Like, it just doesn't work that well. Like, oh, we wanted to pitch people on efficiency, and that's just not where people went. And the other thing that I think gets lost in this conversation is that this is happening against a backdrop of an auto industry that as a whole in the United States is shrinking. The peak auto is 2016. That's the highest auto sales have been. And, you know, in modern history, and it's been going down. So you have a market that we're expecting a larger percentage of it to be EVs by now that is also contracting overall. So of course you're going to see some of these less competitive players fall out. But I think we've all been surprised by how aggressive the moves have been in the wake of the tax credit going away and just how many models have been gone. I mean, we have over 20 models impacted, high end of the 20s. It's kind of hard because some of these cars, like, I don't know, can you say that they were canceled if it was like the Chrysler Airflow, where it's like, who knows whether that was ever going to exist? But just to name some of the big ones, you know, we have the Acura RSX, which is part of the Honda Zero series, which we're going to talk about, the ZDX, the Ford F-150 Lightning, the Honda Zero series Saloon and SUV, the Hyundai Ioniq 6 non-N, and then I don't think the N's going to stick around for that long, the Nissan Ariya, it was skipping 2026. We don't know if it's going to come back in 2027, which is also what Volkswagen says about the ID Buzz, which is, to me, scans as a soft kill, and then we'll see if maybe the market improves. Ram delayed.
Opposite of a soft launch. Soft kill.
Yes, exactly. And then Ram delayed the electric version a bunch of times and the EREV version, that's the range extender version, and then eventually canceled the EV version and then still delayed the EREV version, which is finally supposed to come out this year. Volvo EX30, as you mentioned, and then a bunch of other ones. So there's quite a lot of these.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. And like, I think you summed it up really well. Like, there are different reasons that these are going. Some of them are purely like, okay, this was probably just here to satisfy regulations. Now they don't need anymore. Some of them really did kind of just like missed the mark, just like any car can. And then when you add in everything else happening, it just means that it's just not competitive. So like, you've written a lot about this, about how like, it's good that the not competitive EVs are getting canceled, right? Like, it helps the industry in general to have better options. What do you think are some, which one of these stick out to you as like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, that was probably a good call.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ioniq 6 makes sense to me as an illustrative example of like, it's easier to make a good car than a car that sells. And like, we all love, I love the Ioniq 6. When I reviewed it in 2024, I said it was my favorite EV at the same time. And then 3 months later, I bought a Blazer EV instead. Why'd I do that? Because I want to put my bike in the back of it. Like most Americans, I wanted an SUV or maybe a wagon or something. But, you know, there's just a limited market for the EV sedans and like, Tesla
for sedans in general.
For sedans in general, right? And then you add an EV, which is, you know, even though there's more advantages for an EV sedan compared to a gas sedan, like the difference is bigger. It's just like, and then it had a weird design, which me and a bunch of auto critics like, but, you know, a weird bug-shaped sedan that's also electric. There's a lot of like hand-holding you had to do with the customer to make people understand why this thing is so awesome. And like, I don't think Hyundai dealers were going to do that, and they clearly didn't. And again, I am more interested in that than the average person, and I still didn't really seriously consider it. I also think ZDX, Acura ZDX, which is basically a Cadillac Lyriq underneath, same platform as the GM stuff built in a GM factory, that was always going to be a placeholder in the way that the Honda version is called the Prologue. I mean, it's literally like, this is the part before the story starts, right? Like, we're doing this in the meantime before we can get our shit together, which we'll talk about. But yeah, I wasn't surprised to see that go away, especially when they announced it. It was going to be replaced by the Acura RSX, which then went away, which I was surprised by. There's other things here like the Maserati MC20 Folgore, which they had been promising was definitely going to happen for years since we at Road and Track did the test of the first one. And they're like, it's right around the corner. There's not a big market for EV supercars. And if it does exist, it's not in the Maserati customer base, I don't think. And lastly, when we talk about customer bases, like Ram 1500 REV was originally what the EV was going to be called. Now that name is going to the what used to be the Ram Charger. It's the EREV. It's confusing. And the Ford F-150 Lightning, where, you know, I always pointed out the insanity of there was a time there where there was more electric truck models on sale than regular full-size truck models on sale. And that, I mean, that was just never going to be sustainable, right? They're just, this market or this buyer is not a super EV curious buyer from what we've seen. And even if they are, the price premium on these large vehicles is just so much that it's really hard to see where that's going to work out. So those were some of the ones that weren't super surprising to me. What do you got on the mind?
Yeah, no, I think the trucks are a great example of just how, in retrospect, and even somewhat while it was happening, but just how like first draft this kind of era of EVs was. And, you know, to your point about like they're figuring this shit out, like they're early and they're figuring it out.
Yeah.
Like the trucks, the buyer is not the exact right buyer for an EV. And the economics are just like very, very hard. Like these are all super expensive. And for some reason, you know, these companies like Ford thought, oh yeah, we'll totally be able to sell tons of these like $75,000 F-150 Lightnings when you can buy like almost an identical one that costs half the price that just runs on gas or is a hybrid.
I wouldn't say half the price. I mean, it's like 20% less. I mean, your $50,000 for a crew cab is like, especially if you want four-wheel drive, it's kind of the modern pickup truck environment.
A lot less,
it's insane. But the thing is, they've pushed the prices so high on the gas ones that then having a 20, 25% premium on the electric ones, it's like, come on, there's not that much money in the world.
yeah, totally. The sedans, the Volkswagen ID7 was one of the early ones, like over a year ago. I think this one got pulled. Makes sense. Nissan and Infiniti were working also on sedans, they say, that didn't ever end up happening. Like, that's just going to be a hard sell for the reasons we discussed.
Infiniti electric sedan just gets worse with each editor. I mean, you were struggling from minute one, and then, that wasn't going to work.
Yeah. And the other thing that I'll mention is, like, when you look at this list, a lot of the vehicles just, like, never ended up getting made at all. A lot of things that have been canceled never hit the market to begin with.
Yeah.
A lot of the ones that did just like didn't end up doing that well, even in the era of tax credits and before. Like I think the F-150 Lightning probably did the best out of all of these that have been canceled, and it sold like 30-something thousand units.
And lost money the whole time.
Lost money, which is decent for an EV.
Yeah.
But not good, like in general volumes. And then when you go down the other ones, like, you know, Volkswagen ID Buzz, like it just wasn't selling that many. And I mean that's
230 miles of range for like $70,000. Like that's just, in a world where people are already committed to EVs and already over range anxiety, maybe there's a world for that. But it's just like, also with the carryover software, I mean, yeah, I think that was maybe a good call to skip this.
That's one that doesn't, that one to me doesn't say people don't want EVs, right? Like this is always boiled down to like, oh, people just aren't ready. And it's like, actually, everybody asks me about the ID Buzz. They're like, what do you know about that van? Like, I think it's so cool. And I have to be like, well, it costs too much and it has too little range. And actually they're skipping a model year. So, you know, it's not doing so hot. And it's like that one actually had a lot of potential, I think. More potential if they could have gotten the price and the specs and everything right.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that factors into, you know, there is, yes, there is demand for EVs, but if there is not demand at the price that it costs to build them. Like, I think a lot of people, a lot of the criticism of the ID Buzz is like, oh, it should have been $20,000 cheaper. Like, Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, if they wanted to sell the most, it would be free, right? But there is like, there is some actual economics going on here. And it, those large vehicles are just not where the battery economics make a ton of sense right now. And that's why we're seeing a lot of that. And yeah, there's a lot of products on this list too, when I'm looking at like a Genesis G80 Electrified, which was just a car they already had that then they added, you know, batteries to in a segment that's dying, you know, or yeah, ID7, same thing of like, well, that segment premium sedans doesn't really exist to begin with. And then you narrow it down to people who are EV curious. And then you also have a lot of things like, you know, tariff and policy casualties, like the Volvo EX30 was supposed to be $35,000 and arrived like 2 years before it did, but it was built in China. And that round of tariffs predates even this Trump craziness. That was Biden put that on, were 100% tariffs. So then they have to scramble to build it in Europe. And then when they build it in Europe, it's not price competitive, but it's still designed to hit that price point. So then they have to cheap out on the materials stuff.
Well, then Trump said, oh, you want to build it in Europe?
Yeah, like, you know, still get a tariff.
Hold my beer. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so there's a lot of things like that where you're like, this just, it is not remotely surprising to me. I will say one thing that surprises me on this list, or two things I should say, is the Chevy BrightDrop and the next generation Ford E-Transit. Because I don't know the commercial market that well, but my understanding was that electric vans are doing better than electric trucks in a lot of ways, because vans are often used by, you know, delivery drivers and things like that. You know, the Amazon Rivian vans are very popular. I see E-Transits in commercial or government service relatively often, although that could be the SoCal bubble, who knows. So I was a little surprised to see those ones on the list.
I think it's the same thing as with the consumer cars. Like, the BrightDrop vans were really expensive. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, but it was like 60,000-70,000 or something. It wasn't the same as getting like a regular gas powered panel van. I think the other thing I'll mention is, like you mentioned, you know, you just can't make certain of these vehicles. You can't make like a ID Buzz profitably, and like that's the big driver here, right? Is like, without the regulations, now they're free to focus on like, well, we don't really need volume. Before it was like, we're going to push for volume, we're going to push for scale, we're going to try to make, you know, we'll eventually hit scale and make money on these things. Now, without the regulations, they're like, well, why don't we just look at these and like, why would we sell something that's, I don't think this is the best long-term decision.
Yeah.
They're like, why would we sell something that we don't make money on right now and that we don't see like a clear path toward making money on, because we don't have incentives and we don't have regulations pushing us to do that. And so,
yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a
big, just leads to a lot of these things getting axed.
It's a weird situation, right? Because like, I think there's a lot of people who understandably say, well, you know, let the market decide and the market will work it out and let customers decide. And I think, you know, the market does decide. The market's very smart, but the market decides towards making what is profitable. And like, right, the whole point of the regulations wasn't to make the most profitable cars or to make the cars that are the most fun for us. Like, the point was to push us towards a, you know, averting the worst of the climate catastrophe. And now part of that is that, you know, I don't think there was a lot of real, there was a lot of real effort and consensus on getting people behind this, because we're just in such a weird world where climate change is like still debatable here. I believe
which,
in it.
Which is not.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. But no, and like, I do think there was, from the beginning, just like a lot of people in this country that I talk to that are not particularly right wing or something, like, they don't think the government should be forcing them to buy an EV. And I get that. I'm sympathetic to that. But the idea that like the car companies are just going to do it naturally, like eventually they might. But I think China foresaw that if you want to own the future, like you need to own the technology of the future. And if our auto industry is primarily producing gas vehicles, it's just going to be, I mean, it is already a shrinking market. So 2016 was the top for US auto sales overall. 2019 was the top for gas cars globally. So since then, all of the growth in the market has been through plug-ins and, you know, hybrids and then electric cars. And I think there, a lot of companies are going to miss out on that. And that's, you know, so we've talked a little bit about these side characters, but the big elephant in the room, part of what led us to this, was this Honda decision that was wild. Do you want to talk us through exactly what Honda just did?
Yeah, I mean, I want you to talk us through, because you did a really great story on this, but I'll introduce us, which is that Honda, you know, they had, it was last year or the year before that, they had announced the Zero series, which was their first
CES, you know, real... 2024. So January 2 years ago.
Yeah, sorry. I went and saw these things in person. I went and saw these things in person. I think they looked really cool. They had these like crazy concept designs that they said, yes, we're going to make this. It's going to look like this. This almost like Lamborghini, like wedge shaped sedan, this really out there looking SUV. They said, this is going to be our ground up EV platform. This is going to be software defined. It's going to have all types of crazy new tech in it. And this was like the first real effort from Honda. It was supposed to be, right? Because before that, the Honda Prologue, the Acura ZDX, as you mentioned, both GM-built, GM-platform vehicles with like top hats put on them. And then last week, they came out and said, actually, you know, just like so many others have recently, but even more so, they were like, we're scrapping the Zero Series, we're scrapping the Acura RSX, three EVs that were going to be built in Ohio, no longer. And with seemingly like no real plan to replace that with like a different EV program. They're just like, we misjudged this. And we're going to make gas cars and hybrids.
Yeah. And I think, so there's a lot to unpack here. And I wrote this story from the perspective of someone who's always been a Honda fan, being pretty disappointed in this, as Honda has kept saying, like, we really care about carbon neutrality. We really, you know, want to be a leader in this. And then they keep just not doing it and or making any real effort. And now they're completely alone as the only major automaker in the United States that, or, you know, that competes in the U.S. market, I should say, that has never built a homegrown long-range EV. I mean, Stellantis is lapping these guys. It's like, it's not close. And so it's this weird situation where, you know, the story starts with this conversation I had with Honda's CEO at the roundtable in Japan in like 2022 at Road and Track. And, you know, he was talking about this partnership with GM that at the time was new. And, you know, it wasn't just going to be us slapping our name on an Ultium car. We're going to do affordable EVs together and we're collaborating on hydrogen, this, that, this, and blah, 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 blah. And then very shortly after that, that whole thing fell apart. And they said, we're going to go it alone and we're going to do our own thing. And then 2 years ago, they launched the Zero Series at CES, where they said they were going to do a lot of things at once, which was they were going to do, it was going to be their first real long-range EV, their first software-defined vehicle, their first like AI assistant, anything using AI, and their like next-gen driver assistance system, where like currently Honda Sensing is like, I mean, it's like a 2015 era system, and it'll hold you in the lane kind of, but it's ping pongy. It's not like, it's not a Blue Cruise or a Super Cruise or a Autopilot, anything like that. And so they were about to take this big swing where we're going to do all these four things at once. And when I say about to, I mean, the RSX, I did a video on the productions or the prototype of it that was, you know, they had specs on it. They had a fully, it was completely sitting there, and that was supposed to be on sale this summer, you know, and then Euro Series, both of the cars were supposed to be on sale by the end of this year. They ended up pushing the saloon back a little bit before they killed it. But yeah, it's
not even
wild.
That long before, like this was like a couple months ago, they were like, oh, actually, you know, due to market conditions, the sedan, the saloon, it's going to be pushed to next year. And then pretty soon after that, they just scrapped the whole thing. And it's remarkable compared to the other stuff we've seen. It's remarkable how close to production all these were before they pulled the plug. Like,
and
that,
I mean,
has to be a big part of how they lost so much money on, or they took this big write down on it.
Yeah.
Probably largely because these weren't like imaginary. They were already,
the factory's,
you know,
built. They have a big battery plant. Also, we'll get into this, but they have this Sony Honda joint venture that was making the Afeela, which is going to be built at the same factory. So big question mark about that. But yeah, I mean, there was so much that, and not only, you know, when you say there's nothing, we don't really have a horizon for like what the replacement of this is. It's not even just on the EV front. I mean, so the RSX was supposed to, like when they killed the ZDX immediately after the tax credit, I think it was the first one to go. Like the first,
it was a week before. It was September 20 something. Like right on the eve of the tax credit ending, they were like, "All right, never mind."
Right, which makes sense when you're like, "All right, well, we have this thing that's in a similar price bracket and class as our homegrown thing. So yeah, let's get rid of it, and then we can make room for the homegrown thing." But what's crazy about that is not only have they then killed the what was supposed to replace it, but also they were at some point so committed to this that they were planning to get rid of the RDX, their high volume compact crossover, like BMW X3 competitor, in favor of these cars. And now they're scrambling to make a hybrid generation that's not going to come out for probably at least 2 years. So they're going to have a full gap in their, like, that compact crossover segment that is where everyone's bread gets buttered in the luxury world, where all of the big number names are competing. They're just going to have nothing. And like, I think one thing I pulled out from their release on this, where they took, it was a $15.7 billion write down on this compared, I don't know if it was 0.7. It was over somewhere between 15 and 16 billion US dollars on that, all attributed to the changing EV plans. And then also the fact that they in their own language cannot compete in China right now. They also said the write down was because of our inability to respond flexibly to all of this. And that's, it's pretty damning when you're like, it's because we can't compete and we can't do anything flexibly. And,
arguably, they were the most flexible because they had the GM platforms. That's what allowed them to be like, this isn't really our car. So we're just going to, it's not as expensive for them to like cut the ZDX.
Right.
But then with this, yeah.
Yeah, but they did. They had to pay GM a lot of money to cut those programs because they had contracted for a certain volume. Yeah, and I think this is a big challenge. Honda doesn't want to do something poorly. They're reputationally concerned. They care a lot about making sure what they do well. But I think this is a big risk for them of letting perfect be the enemy of good, where they're so afraid to. What I've heard from people, especially since that story came out, a couple people at Honda, was that the product was going to be pretty uncompetitive, as it were. The architecture was built to support up to 800 volts, but the first cars were going to be 400 volt class, which whatever. That's like some of the only technical details we have about them. Even though they were pretty close to launch, they were sort of just not on that list of like, we knew very little. We saw like over 300 miles of range, but they have no real history of doing cutting edge software. They have no real history of doing cutting edge AI or ADAS. And so these were all going to be hard problems to solve. And I get wanting to step away from that, but separately it's like, well, these problems aren't getting any easier. And at some point, like when you can't compete because you don't have experience, the solution being let's not continue not competing, like, how does that cycle break? You're not going to just launch on your first try. Do you really think you're going to beat people who have done this for 20 years? Maybe Honda is that good. Maybe they can figure it out. But I do think now we're at this place where there's nothing on the horizon for the US market in the EV world. And buyers, meanwhile, are getting used to EVs. And now, so you have a Prologue or a ZDX buyer who's going to return their 2 or 3 year lease and come back to the Honda store and see, okay, well, the only option is now I had this Acura, and now if I want to stay in Honda, I got to go down to a Honda brand car that's still built by GM. Meanwhile, GM is going to be launching their second and third generation of these things. And I think the other real challenge for them is that Tesla launches the Model 3 as the first high volume product, the first like semi-attainable thing that everyone's excited about in 2017. And the bumpers are falling off because they didn't test it in the rain. And then they have all these huge problems, but it's 2017. EVs are new. Buyers are first adopters. They're open to that. 2021, we get all these next gen, or the legacy companies, Rivian gets on the game, Lucid gets in the game, Hyundai, Kia, all these things. And a lot of these problems crop up. There's teething issues, there's problems, but okay, it's everyone's first time around, whatever. 2024 comes around, Ultium has the big problems. There's big problems at a bunch of different companies, right? And it's like, all right, well, it's everyone's first time around. How patient do you think buyers are? In 2029, are we still going to be cool with that? And I think Honda is basing this all on this idea of if we wait and learn on the sidelines, we can come in when we really understand this. But I don't think these lessons get learned just autonomously, right? Companies learn these lessons the hard way. And putting some skin in the game and actually being out there, having customers experience your software and give you feedback, as opposed to just getting feedback on GM software that you have no control over, having that feedback loop, learning how to respond quickly, learning how to be flexible. All of these are core essential survival skills for the next era. And Honda's just not flexing that muscle in a way that I don't know, it's weird that in 2029, Stellantis will have had 5 years of experience selling long range EVs in the United States to a buyer base that I should point out too. People want electric Hondas. If you look at, there was one survey recently.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can introduce it if you want.
No, just that the Prologue, I mean, Honda was putting a lot of incentives on these at a certain point. There was also a tax credit. These were like crazy lease deals. But Honda sold like a bajillion Prologues in the first year that it was on sale. In the first like few months, they, you know, it was on sale for not even a full year, and they were in the top like five or something.
Yeah.
EVs and people in America. People like them. People want a Honda. Same thing we always say about Toyota. People just like have an affinity for the brand, and they just want that brand. And so for Honda to start walking away from that is kind of perplexing, especially as you say, like, you know, by the time they really get in the game, if they ever do, it's all these other companies are going to be on their like third generation products. They're going to be really, you know, fleshed out. And even Toyota, which has been like even more hesitant than Honda in some ways, or just as much. Toyota's
definitely
getting
not more
in a big way.
Yeah,
not more.
But more publicly Toyota's willing to air their skepticism, at least. Right?
Yeah, like, they were publicly like, we don't think this is the future, and yet they're gonna have four Toyota branded EVs in America by the end of this year, and then also some Lexuses. So
was what I was gonna bring up. Where that if you. There was this survey of like, it wasn't in market shoppers, but it was just general people of whose EV brand do you have the highest opinion of? And I mean, you would swear the chart was upside down, because it was like at the bottom was like Tesla, Rivian, Lucid, Hyundai, Kia. And at the top were Toyota and Honda. Now below that was like BMW and Audi, which makes some sense. But like Toyota was number one with Honda number two. And I think, you know, anyone who follows the AV industry closely knows, I mean, that's just not remotely representative of reality. But you can sustain that false image of like Toyota and Honda were big pusher, you know, leaders in hybrids. Although I think this is a place where Toyota and Honda getting lumped in together sometimes really helps Honda, because Toyota and Honda both introduced hybrids around the same time in the early 2000s. But Toyota just took that ball and ran with it in a way that like...
Yeah.
Honda, like, they don't even have that many. That's another big part of the piece, is they don't, they're like, all right, well, we're not going to focus on EVs because they're not profitable yet. We're going to focus on hybrids. But you look at all these segments, like, they have one hybrid powertrain that goes in three products, one of which is the Prelude, which for all intents and purposes doesn't exist. Or sorry, four products, Prelude, and then Accord, Civic, and CRV. And in the CRV, it's not super competitive because it's a small output thing. And then all of their bigger vehicles don't offer hybrids, whereas like Hyundai, who's lapping them on EVs, also offers like hybrid versions of the Palisade and like all of their products, right? Like Santa Fe's got a hybrid, all of these things. And so it's weird, because Toyota said, we're going to focus on hybrids, and they really meant it. I mean, every Toyota now, except for the GR86, I believe, offers a hybrid, and many of them only come as hybrids.
Yeah.
And then Honda said, we're going to focus on hybrids. And now, well, Acura, as of this year, will be... once the ZDXs are off the lot, will be one of the only brands in America. I think the only one I could think of besides them is Alfa Romeo, because the Tonale is dead, or the PHEV is dead, to offer no electrified products whatsoever. No mild hybrids, no plug-in hybrids, no EVs. And like, this is a company that had a flagship hybrid supercar 10 years ago. They had an MDX hybrid 10 years ago. Like, Toyota has been making a hybrid Highlander and a hybrid Lexus RX for like 20 years. And they just like, so there's this huge question of like, why should we continue trusting that they're going to lead the future? And the point of that, bringing up that survey, was like, you can sustain an alternate reality where people just trust that Honda typically makes fuel efficient cars, so they must make the best EVs. That like thing can stay in the water for a certain amount of time, but once it gets diluted out and people start hearing about the Hyundais and the Chevys and all these other things for years, like, you're not going to reverse that. And once those Prologue buyers, who have now, you know, if they then come back and lease a second Prologue, and now they've been driving a product that was built by GM for 6 years, and hey, actually the quality's not bad, and also, you know, GM has six entries here and you guys just keep having the one, like, you need to at least play the game, at least get in there and make an argument to customers, because yes, it is a challenge to sell EVs, and yes, it is a challenge to make profit off of them. But one thing we keep seeing is EV buyers are very satisfied and they are very loyal. And once you lose that customer to a Hyundai or a GM or a Ford or anything, it's hard to bring them back. That kind of brings us into, you know, the next big question, which is, okay, so the Honda ones are gone. A lot of these ones we talked about as good ideas are gone. What do we think is next? I mean, who else is getting a knock from the Grim Reaper pretty soon?
Yeah, this is purely just us. Like, I just, because I know, you know, we have people in the industry who listen to this, people at these companies. This is just us speculating on what's going to get, what could get canceled next. I think the, you mentioned the Aphila, that to me feels like it should have never been built in the first place.
Yeah.
It's super uncompetitive, super expensive. They're starting with one that's like $80,000 or $90,000, 300 miles of range.
Has worse specs like than like a
100 something Model S charging. Yeah. It's like, it's a flagship. It's a flagship luxury EV, like 10 years or more too late.
Yeah. And the argument for that one keeps being like, oh, it's about the entertainment and the in-cabin experience. And it's got a PlayStation built in and all that. They're going to lead on software. And I always like to point out, like, the people who tell me that are not people that use a lot of Sony consumer electronics, because I have them. I have a Sony camera. I had a PlayStation 5. I've had a lot of Sony electronics in my life. Great quality, great products in a lot of ways. Menu systems on those things are absolutely confounding. When you look, when I sat in an Aphila at CES last year, you know, it was like there was a row of icons stretching all the way across it that were all this big. And if you've used a PlayStation 3, you know what I'm talking about. This company is not that good at designing UIs, doing a lot of other things well. And then it's only going to be sold in California. And also a huge part of that argument was we're going to share costs with the Hondas that are built at the same factory, which are now not going to be built there. I'm totally conflicted on whether this is going to make it. Because on one hand, like, already it was going to be impossible to compete on cost. Already it was, the specs were bad. But also, like, the number of freaking Instagram ads I've gotten for this thing, the number of stores they have built, the number of events they have sponsored. Like, this is, Honda can cut their EVs and still have their own company, but like Sony Honda Mobility is a fully separate company. By law, they don't talk to each other because they're so terrified of anti-collusion stuff. And so like all of those people, their whole job depends on this thing continuing. And I don't know. I don't know how they've sunk so much into it. I don't know how much they are so willing to walk away.
So far, as far as we know, there's no news. Drive reported this. They asked them. They were like, "What's the deal with Sony Honda Mobility going forward with Aphila?" And they were like, "We will get back to you.
Yeah.
We have nothing to share." I've seen so many YouTube ads, and they're not. They don't captivate me. I'm like, I'm interested because it's such an odd new EV company, but the ads are. The ads are weird.
Yeah, I was asking this at CES when I was getting the demo, and like the guy was talking to the AI system, and he was like, "Hi, Aphila," or Aphila, and the system was like, "Great, I'll call you Aphila." I'm like, "Cool," doesn't know its own name. And then the like command he showed me to impress me was like, "Can we make the theme more Japanese?" And then the car switched to its background to be themed after the PlayStation game Ghosts of Tsushima. And then they were talking about how it has Crunchyroll support. I'm like, so this car is for anime nerds who want to spend $100,000 on an EV with specs from 2017. Like, I don't know who it's for.
Hey, there's a market for that, okay?
There is. And I'll tell you what, California is the right place to look for those people. But it's a bizarre product.
And it might be Patrick George and Patrick George alone.
Yes. I think... to me, it scans as Sony saw these companies, these Chinese tech companies getting into the EV game. It was like, we want a piece of that, but without really understanding. I mean, I wrote this whole story a year or so back after interviewing the president after CES, the president of Sony Honda Mobility. And I was like, you know, your charging specs are behind Tesla. Like this, like what is the real argument here? And the answers were just like, it's going to have AI and be personalized and better entertainment. And like, I don't know. You can plug a PlayStation into the DVD player of almost any car. It's just like, or not
think,
the DVD.
I think we HDMI. Should. I think we should move on from Sony Honda. What else do you think we can trade off? What else do you think might be next up?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the GV or the G80 electrified wasn't the last Genesis to go. I think this is a weird one where Genesis. You know, Hyundai and Kia have crushed it on EVs, and Genesis has just not quite found the sweet spot. The GV60 was selling like fewer than 4,000 units a year in its best year during the tax credit era. It offers like not a lot of range. It's like around 250 miles in like the all-wheel drive version. It's a little bit weird styling. It's small. It's just, it's not a super high volume segment. And now with, Yeah, I'm not super certain on that. And same thing with GV70 electrified. They paused production last summer, and they said it was temporary. I think Korea Business Times or someone reported that it was maybe would be permanent. But then now Genesis has said there's going to be an EREV version, like an extended range electric vehicle version, which might make some sense. But right now that car, like the GV70 electrified, which is a compact crossover built on this, it's just a converted gas prop or platform built in Alabama. It's like $70,000. And that's like significantly more than EX60 is going to come in at. It's significantly more than, you know, BMW iX3, yeah. GLC. And it's just, it's so clearly not in that same class. Although it still has an 800 volt architecture, which is the saving grace of all of these. They all charge very well. Yeah, so that one, I wouldn't surprise if one of those falls, and like GV90 is going to be their big EV push, and I think maybe we'll hit a sweeter spot.
Yeah, I think the last one I'll mention is the GM has been pretty adamant that they're not canceling any of these, their big trucks, that they're not canceling anything that's currently on the market, just like, you know, pulling back production a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, when you look at, you know, Ford had an issue with the Lightning making money, and that was just one. GM has the Chevy Silverado EV, GMC Sierra EV, GMC Hummer, the Hummer twins, the pickup and the SUV. And like, is there enough demand? If there wasn't enough demand to support one Ford full-size truck, is there enough to support three GM ones? Like, I just don't know. You know, the sales of them have not been, like, combined, it's roughly in the same ballpark as the F-150 was by itself in its peak year. So
I will say, I mean, they have they just the haven't advantage sold that many of them, because all the GM Ultium stuff is using the same cell modules. Like, I imagine their battery cost is significantly lower than what, you know, Ford was paying, but they also offer a lot more range, which kind of eats that all up. And yeah, I agree. I think they have enough pride and they care about the EV truck market enough that they will hold on for a bit. But my trajectory here, I would guess they're going to end a lot quicker than a normal generation of trucks and try to like bridge the gap into something else. But I would be surprised if all three of these got like a full 6 or 7 year model run, because it's just like, that is not the formula for EV pickup truck success right now, I don't think, because it's so focused on targeting that buyer who does tow or does need something that's a heavier duty cycle than a Lightning. Although now that the Lightning's gone, there's a little more room there. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see if with the Lightning gone, that do they have a huge sales pickup, or is that, you know, was the Lightning EV truck buyers who are now going to go elsewhere, or were they F-150 buyers who are just going to keep buying F-150s? I don't know. Yeah. And then, you know, just in terms of other marketing segments that maybe aren't super into this, I do think Jeep Wagoneer S and Dodge Charger EV, I mean, they got off to a rough start quality-wise and also just launch-wise, and there was supposed to be a bunch of different cheaper variants of the Wagoneer S that I don't know where those are yet. And the Charger
just clearly didn't want to make either of those anyway. Like,
right, and now they don't have to. So
yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's... I love beating up on Stellantis as much as the next guy, which is to say quite a bit. But I will also say that I do not envy the job of trying to sell EVs to Dodge Charger customers. It's not an easy job, and it's going to take a while. And I think, you know, if the product was like awesome, there would be some convert, you know, unless they do a mid-cycle update that fixes a lot of issues with these cars. I mean, our contributor, Andrew Lambrecht, has written about how his car, he leased one for nothing. I mean, it was literally for 2-year lease. It was like $3,600 all in, which is ridiculously low. But he just completed a buyback with them because the car spent so much time in the shop, and then they also gave him extra money. So yeah. And I hear bad things about the Charger EV, and I don't really hear about the Wagoneer S. One last thing I want to put out there, just because it's interesting, because it's all of these that we're talking about that we think could be canceled are products that I think we would agree we're not super big fans of or struggle to see a market for. But Porsche has also reportedly been having conversations about potentially axing the Taycan, which would be really interesting, because that was an EV OG. That was one of the first like real competitive, you know, awesome charging.
Like 2019 charging. Or something.
No, it was 2021, but it was, I think, Now I'm questioning
myself.
We'll
see. They'll fact check us in the comments. It was one of those.
But it was just like 800 volt charging, could handle track performance, all these awesome things. And, you know, and then they gave it a big upgrade last year where now it does like 10 to 80 in like 16 minutes, gets like over 300 miles of range in some configurations. It's great. It's fun to drive. It's fast. But as we talk about, sedans are sinking ship a little bit. And Porsche is, I don't think people have really caught on to how much of a cash crunch they're in. I mean, they also on this list that we didn't mention, Porsche was originally going to make a three-row SUV, the slot above the Cayenne, that was going to be purely electric. And now they've axed the electric version of that. So I think they are so margin constrained and they're speaking to such a deep enthusiast audience that it's just challenging to get those people, like people who buy Porsches for flat sixes and manuals and like that. You know, we've talked about this a couple weeks ago with Lamborghini, right? It's like those buyers aren't buying things based on efficiency. When you're dropping 200 grand on a car, like you're not worried about gas mileage, right? And I think the Taycan is just in a weird place where it has now been on sale long enough that it's not the like total segment standard for all of the specs. It's mostly the driving enthusiast option. And then like the driving enthusiast is maybe the one that's less into EVs right now. It just in general, that whole executive sedan class is so small that it's just, it's tough.
That would be a shame. The Taycan Cross Turismo is one of the favorite EVs I've ever driven. It's like when people always ask me like, so what's the, you know, people I'm sure ask you too, when they hear about your job, like what's your favorite?
Yeah.
That's like one of the ones that comes up.
They're sick.
It's so fast and so cool. I think before we get on to kind of our lightning round of like some of the other news this week, I wanted to bring up one other thing, which is that like this makes us think about like who are the companies that are going to lead the future, right? If there are so many automakers, not all of them are like reversing completely. Honda is, you know, who leads in as the industry keeps like shifting toward better technology and toward electrification. I think it made me think about when this Honda news came out, it made me think about something Jitain Bale said a couple weeks ago when we had him on the show, the Eclipse venture capitalist. He was like, I don't think all of these legacy car companies, like if the future is what we think it's going to be for cars, I don't think all these legacy car companies are going to get there by like 2030. Because they're not committed, they think short term, and the first opportunity they get, they backtrack and they cancel cars. And I think he has a point, especially because when you contrast that with what we saw last week from the non-legacies, we saw Rivian and Lucid, which we'll talk about in a sec, like very much pushing forward with their new cars because they absolutely have to.
Right.
These are some of the tech leaders. They are going to keep innovating and putting out new vehicles until they, you know, either succeed or fail, because that's their only option. The legacies, like, they don't have to do that. So they're going to go slow and bide their time. And maybe they hit 2030 and it's a Rivian or a Tesla or a Lucid that is absolutely eating their lunch because they have been investing this whole time while Honda and the others were like pivoting to hybrids. So I mean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the pivot to hybrids thing is just like, I mean, just they're a bridge technology. Even proponents will tell you that. And if you're planning your whole business about owning the bridge, like, don't you want to own the property on either side of it? Like, that's to me, like, I'm more hybrid skeptic than the average person of just like, I think I love a good gas engine and I love an electric car. And I think it's very hard to make something compelling that has both because you got to interact. But I do want to push back on what you said of that not everyone is reversing, but Honda is, because I actually think it's the opposite. Everyone else was driving in one direction and
then
put it in reverse. Honda's the one that's been consistent the whole time. They're like, here's what we do with EV programs. We announce them and then we cancel them. It's consistent.
And that's fair.
No, but I think part of, you know, one thing I have to say about Honda that, you know, I've been pretty critical, as you can hear about that. But one point that I think gets lost is that Honda's not that big of a company. It, in terms of its total size as an automaker, it's not a huge global player. It's a huge player in America, but even among that, it's not the biggest. And that really leads into, like, you know, for Sergio Marchionne, the CEO of Fiat Chrysler Automotive, which was this weird conglomeration of brands that didn't quite fit together, which then merged with Peugeot Citroën to become Stellantis, which added all these other things. You know, it sounds silly and it looks weird from the outside, but the thing that he kept saying 10 years ago that holds true, or 15 years ago that holds true today, is like, this next era is very expensive. Regulatory burdens in every country are very expensive. You need a lot of scale to survive. So when I think about who's not going to make it, I mean, in order to make it, you definitely have to compete. You need to be a flagship level software company. Like, we've seen that. We know that great software allows you to cut costs out of the vehicle, and then it also allows you to make a vehicle that just feels polished in a way that, like, your gas car just feels older than the other things you operate. It responds to things slower. The touchscreen is, like, buyers do care about that. Now, the other thing that they say, like Jiten was saying, that you need to lead on is AI and autonomy. I think autonomy, yes, through that AI, maybe, and then in-car AI is something that everyone is saying is going to be really important. Do consumers demand it? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe don't know. Eventually, like, once I'm so used to them being bad that it's hard for me to get excited about it. But anyways, that's expensive. Autonomy is really expensive. This period where you're making gas and electric is really expensive. And then any bet you make that's wrong, just by the sheer logic of the car industry, where a factory costs so much money, you are always going to be losing a ton of money. So the point is, these companies that are smaller are going to really struggle. I think Mazda is in trouble. They also don't really have a real, I mean, they're the other, when I said Honda is the only automaker in America, major automaker, that doesn't have a real long range EV. Mazda is the other one, but I didn't include them because they're not major in this market. And they're not really major in other, they're pretty small in most of the markets they compete in. I think Mazda is going to have a challenge just in that they have some benefit of, they collaborate with Toyota on hybrids, but Toyota then collaborates with Subaru on EVs and this weird mix match. But Toyota's this big enough giant with a big enough brand that maybe it all works out. But the companies that aren't Toyota backed or connected in Japan, Nissan and Honda, I mean, there's a reason we've seen that merger explored, right? Like, Honda needs to either nail it at a cost that no one else can compete with, or they need a partner. They need something bigger. It was going to be GM, and then it wasn't. It was going to be Nissan, then it wasn't. There aren't that many great options left. I don't know, Stellantis, Ford, maybe. Stellantis has always been a question mark of just, they've got fingers in every pie, but they're not really winning anywhere. It seems like a low point for them, but they do have the scale to maybe figure some of this out. But so far, their ability to not only develop new technologies, but also just convince their customers of, I mean, like with the Ram 1500, they had the Hurricane V or inline six, which was just a better motor than that 5.7 V8 was. And then their customers got so mad, they had to bring it back, even though, like, the Hurricane's more powerful, tows more, better cooling, like, there wasn't major reliability issues off the rat. Like, their customer base doesn't want the new technology, which means they can't really justify developing it, but being behind for, you can't just do that forever. So those are my takes. What about you?
Yeah, they Ram should figure out how to put a V8 badge on the truck without actually putting the V8 in the truck.
Yes.
That would be 100%. That would be amazing. I think we should move on to our lightning round of news. Dude, what? No?
You just asked me to piss off every automaker of, like, who's not going to survive the next 10 years, and then you dodge the question.
I didn't ask you to say that at all. I just asked for your thoughts. You went off.
All right, maybe I misread that one. That's on me.
No, like I said, I think that it lends new credibility to that statement from Jiten. Like, you really start to see, like, I think it's easy to see these startup guys. You know, he's a Rivian guy. RJ Scaringe said similar stuff about, like, well, we're the only ones who can really survive this moment or thrive in this moment. And I think you see that and you're like, well, come on. Like, really? Like, you don't think these big companies have what it takes? But then you just look at the incentives, right? Of, like, the small companies, they may not figure it out. The small startups, they may not do it, but that's their only choice, is to innovate, to be better than everybody else. And the big companies, the big establishment companies, They don't necessarily have to do that. So like,
yeah,
they play it wrong and they may end up, you know, they're already behind tech. Some of them are already behind technologically, obviously behind Tesla, yeah, behind Rivian. It's a question of like, as those startups scale up and get more established, do the big guys suddenly find themselves not only behind, but also behind, like in a big way, in a scaled up way, like over across, yeah, the world, right?
Right. And I don't want to be unfair to the position these people are in of like, look, when you look at a Honda or a Mazda, right? Like they recognize more than I do how expensive this next era is going to be, right? And so what they need is as much cash as possible. And how do you get as much cash as possible? Sell the stuff that makes money. And so like they're in this impossible catch 22, right? Where they need more money to develop all of this next stuff. But the things that make them money are also the things that tie them further to this sort of dying past where they like, okay, in the long term, our ability to make 4-cylinder hybrids is not what's going to define the future of the company. But right now, software-defined EVs don't pay the bills. So yep, what are you going to do? It's not an easy situation. And I don't want to make light of that.
No,
but
it's not obvious.
It is the situation.
It's just tough.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, let's move on to lightning round. I want you to go first. We've each brought a couple of stories that we're going to bring up and talk about. So what do you got, Mac?
Yeah, so let's start with the big news that dropped end of last week, but after we recorded, which was Lucid's Investor Day. They put out a bunch of stuff about the future of the company, including they're going to do like a Tesla-style two-door cyber cab equivalent, a robo-taxi. But the bigger news is the midsize platform is going to support, I believe, three models that we know of so far. Two mm-hmm. of them are now named. So we have the Lucid Earth, which we kind of all expected, and then the Lucid Cosmos, which is actually going to come first. And the Cosmos is the equivalent to a Tesla Model Y, the more road-going, probably more, you know, slope-backed, like just mm-hmm. a more road-going, more efficiency-focused vehicle. And that's really interesting because then that allows the Earth and then whatever comes next to be a little bit more like Rivian R2 adjacent, maybe more traditional SUV, maybe more boxy. Mm-hmm. They didn't release many details on this. I mean, it was mostly, you know, investor stuff, but we do know it'll have an 800 volt platform, which is no surprise given Lucid's, you know, love for that stuff. Mm-hmm. It should be super efficient. Again, no surprise. They're claiming 4.5 miles per kilowatt hour, which would be phenomenal, better than anything in the class by a long way. And great charging numbers, though we don't have like a 10 to 80 time, a 0.22 coefficient of drag, so super slippery. And all of that in theory, if you're really efficient and super slippery and also have an 800 volt platform, the efficiency should allow you to get more range out of the same battery, which means you can lower your battery costs and ideally, you know, hit the target on beating your competitors on price. All we know mm-hmm. on pricing is that these are going to be around $50,000 and that the first ones are going to be built in Saudi Arabia before
yep.
potentially moving to the Arizona factory. So who knows what the tariff situation will be there. But yeah, it's a pretty big drop. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it was a bold move. There's definitely, it can't be an accident that Lucid had this investor day the exact same day that Rivian held its R2 launch in, at South by Southwest. No, I think we've been waiting for more details on the Lucid stuff for a long time. Like they've talked about midsize is coming. Midsize will have a couple different options. We knew it was always going to be at the end of this year. Now we finally have like a name and a couple of other things. I think it's also telling that they did this at an investor day, not like a traditional, you know, product reveal event. Like
yeah.
they're trying to convince Wall Street and that class that like they're worth still betting on, that they have
right.
a vision that they can you know, cross this like valley of death and get to profitability someday. So yeah, I mean, the thing is like, we didn't learn a ton. We learned that there's going to be a couple of these mid-sized vehicles that they're going to like serve slightly different purposes, and that Lucid's really going hard at autonomous in the same way that Tesla and Rivian are. Like they
yeah.
announced that the midsize is also going to be a robo-taxi, just like the Gravity is on Uber. They announced this Lunar, it's a concept right now, the like two-door robo-taxi. So, you know, they're going in sort of the same directions as some of the other startups.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. You know, I can't wait to learn more on that one.
Yeah, for sure. I'll go next. We should talk about the BMW i3. this dropped this week. This is big news. I actually saw this a few months back in Spain. I did a video on it, which you can find on our YouTube channel. This is the Electric 3 series, like finally here. This is not a successor to the i3, like weird hatchback, despite the fact that all of us would have loved that, especially listeners of this show.
Yep. All this 14 of the old buyers.
Yeah, exactly. This is a true 3 series equivalent, or it's the Electric 3 series, and the specs are really, really good. When I first saw it in Spain a few months ago, all they said was it's going to have more range than the iX3, because same platform as the iX3, but sedan, so like slipperier, lighter. And the iX3 has 400, so it was like, damn, that's going to be a real competitor. Then they came out with what they think is going to be the EPA range number, 440 miles.
Yeah.
Which is like huge.
And 440 BMW miles, which we just saw this report from Consumer Reports about like who always overperforms their estimates. And it's BMWs almost even on the highway overperform their EPA range, which is ridiculous because the EPA test is not a highway test. So like, this could be like a 407. I mean, who knows if it'll also overperform, but range
this really puts it in the same ballpark as Tesla. I mean, it's more than Tesla Model S.
Yeah.
It's more than the base Lucid Air. And both of those cost probably more than this is going to. We don't know what the price is yet, but iX3, the crossover is 60 grand. I would imagine the i3 is going to be a little bit less than that for the equivalent sort of spec. So this is going to be like a really good competitor. What do you think about the i3?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a good competitor. I think just BMW is one of the few companies that I think nobody nailed it on their first try, but I think the i3 and the i8 were cool and we liked it. And then their second gen stuff was cool and we liked it. Like the iX and the i4 are great cars. There's things that we would like to fix, range stuff, whatever. But like in terms of the last generation of luxury EVs from legacy companies, I mean, BMW was clearly in the lead. You loved the iX3 when you drove it. Our man Andre in Romania is driving the iX3 right now, loves it. And he's working on this story that I really like, which will hopefully be up by the time this podcast comes out, about how, you know, this is more important to BMW because the 3 Series is the core of the brand. I mean, the BMW 3 Series is like the everyday enthusiast car, and it has been the entire time I've watched the auto industry. I mean, really, for the last 40 years. And
you're that old? Damn, dude.
No, but like, for the last 40 years since I was negative 10. And the i3 just really looks like it's hitting all those numbers, and it's really going to be more, I just think it's more interesting. It's got cool design. It's, you know, the back's a little tall and weird. We'll see how it looks in person. But generally, I think BMW designs tend to grow on me over time. And like, I hated the iX when it came out, and I went to liking it by now. And like, I think the i3, I'm starting at like, this is pretty good. And I feel like by the time I see it in person, I'll really like it. And it's cool that like a company that really has sedans in the DNA, like in the US, it's more of a crossover company at this point, right? But like, Andre's piece is about how this is important because the company it pitches itself as the ultimate driving machine. It driving experience is so core to it. And, you know, you can't only make big 5,000 pound SUVs if that's going to be the tagline. So having a really sporty, really cool looking car with great tech that's not a Tesla, it's just, it's going to be really valuable in the market, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. What do you got next?
This is a weird one. In talking about companies that are not giving up because they have no other choice, VinFast, our man Julian spotted this in the filings about the company said in 2022 when it came to the U.S., I was at the first drive. It was wild. But they were saying, okay, we're going to start building these in North Carolina in 2024. And I said, good luck. so did everyone else. And by 2024, they're like, actually, we're going to do an indefinite halt on the factory, which, you know, as we talked about companies skipping model years, when you hear indefinite halt, that usually is just the gentle way to prepare you for when they announce cancellation. But it looks like they're resuming construction on it. It's going to have a lot less jobs than they initially predicted. It was supposed to be like 7,500-ish. Now it's like 1,600-ish. It's going to be a smaller facility. But clearly the company is not tucking its tail and leaving the U.S. and not giving up. And given how negative many of the reviews have been and the experience, like, I'm surprised that they're sticking it out. But maybe there's a path for them. What do you think?
Yeah, VidFest's a weird one. I went to a, it no longer exists. Now it's a Tesla showroom. There was a, or I think it's a Tesla showroom. There was a VinFast dealership or showroom in Berkeley when I was living there. And
it's
I went
a showroom because there's only one dealership. They just switched to a franchise model, and the first dealership opened 10 minutes from my house. I need to go check it out.
So that was a showroom. I went in, and the salesman, God bless him, seemed like he hadn't seen a human in weeks. Like, he was so, he was stunned that there was anybody there. So that just goes to show you, like, how, I think that's a pretty good encapsulation of, like, how VinFast is doing. I see them. People lease them because they're cheap. But, yeah, I don't know. It's, they're going to have a really hard time. Like, it's a terrible, it's such a challenging time to launch an EV for any company, especially one that has no name recognition and is not better than the, like, at least if you're Lucid or Rivian or Slate, like, you're new, but you're different and in some ways superior. VinFast is just like a okay to bad EV that's trying to launch that nobody knows what it is. They're really only selling them, I think, on cheap leases. So
Yeah, I mean, the last time I drove a VF8, it was a lot better than the one I had driven 2 years before, but still had just like direct typos and translation errors and warnings it was showing me, and just like weird, like failure things of like failure of rear window regulator. I'm like, I've never, and then it just fixed itself and worked. There was Out of Spec Bits did a good video of showing that the cars in reverse anti-hill roll down feature doesn't really have a lot of logic to it. So if you put it on a hill in a certain way, the car will just floor it and spin its tires.
It was like on snow or something.
Yeah,
right?
No, it was on like a muddy hill, and it was if it wanted to roll, it would prevent itself from rolling by just ripping burnouts and wind detect it. So there's like just a lot of weird stuff that you would never see wrong with other cars. But I think the one bull case I have for them is that no one has heard of it really outside of like EV industry people.
Yeah,
like the people I know who I've seen them at Chargers and like, oh yeah, I got it because it's a cool lease deal and I like the color, and like those people, you know, if it's a cheap car and it works, great. And maybe
hope
by the time
you never find yourself on a muddy hill.
Yes, maybe by the time they scale up enough that people hear about them, they will have fixed these problems. But if people, they're lucky that they don't have more publicity right now, because if people caught on to the quality of the products right now, it would be a 10-year hole to dig out of, and maybe in 2 years, we'll be able to get out of this. But
yeah,
we're going over, so let's go to your last one.
Lastly, I want to talk about high gas prices. You are much more better off for this than I am. I just went to Costco to get gas, and it was $5.25 a gallon at Costco in the Bay Area, which is like crazy. It's like a dollar at least more than it was a year ago this time. It's pushing $4 a gallon nationwide, national average. It might hit, honestly, it probably will hit $4 by the time this airs in a couple of days. And people are starting to consider EVs a little bit more. Like, we're seeing Edmunds, you know, commenting on this, like they're seeing a little bit more searches for EVs. We're seeing anecdotally that's happening. I think, you know, I want to hear your thoughts. My thinking is like, it's really easy to just paint a straight line between like, oh, gas prices go up, so therefore people must buy more EVs. And it's like, well, when you know the market, when you look at the market and it's like $50,000 for, you know, for a pretty good EV, maybe 40, 45, it's not exactly like the kind of decision people are making when they think gas prices are going to be up for a couple of months or even a year. Like, it's not cheap. I think where it could come into play is used EVs. Like, this could be a really good, just perfect mix of tons more, you know, off-lease Teslas and other cars coming on the market that are like $20,000, $25,000, genuinely in the realm of consideration for people who are like fairly cost conscious, not trying to buy, you know, the hot new thing. And they're like, you know, they're in the market and they're like, yeah, gas prices suck right now. Used EVs are better than ever. I can get one that's 300 miles for $20,000, $25,000, even less. Yeah, like, screw it. I'm just going to do it finally. One stat that I want to just leave you with is, this is crazy, in a Bloomberg article that I saw on this very topic, according to Bloomberg NEF, which is their like research division, U.S. drivers will pay an additional $1.65 billion at the pump this week. That was the prediction.
Yeah. One week.
Early this
shows
week.
How much of that stuff we are burning. It's wild.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
What do you think? You think people are going to jump at EVs?
This is an awkward one because I think you should get an EV for other reasons. But this was something I get a lot as, you know, someone who's known in my social circles as the car guy of like, hey, I really want to trade up my car because I want something with better gas mileage. And when you look at it on a year over year basis, the likelihood that getting something that's 4 miles per gallon better, that will then, when you add in the fact that you're paying a lot to upgrade the car, your taxes, fees, all these things, like, it's actually pretty rare that like the dollars and cents calculation makes sense, right? And so like, yes, if you're feeling the temporary pain of high gas prices right now, the idea of chasing a used EV like satisfies that. But then when you actually look at how much you're going to pay, who knows, right? So if you are already looking for a car though,
yeah,
I would have told you 3 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, before we, you know, bombed Iran, that it was a great time to buy a used EV. That stays the same. And I want to end then on just the point that it was made in a Technology Connections video. Great channel. If you are willing to listen to people talk about EVs for an hour and a half and want to hear some guy talk about heat pumps for an hour, he's great. But he was talking about why he's a believer in EVs. And he says, I'm a Midwesterner and I believe in a great deal. And the challenge with gas is, you know, you think of EV infrastructure and, oh my God, we got to build all this infrastructure. Gas infrastructure extends to the Strait of Hormuz. That's how far away that like that change affects your gas price. And obviously energy prices, like natural gas is used for energy, that is also fluctuating based on this. But the need to the reliance on fossil fuels means you will always be needing to seek new places to find them. You will always be needing to build more infrastructure to transport them. And while every other thing in your house is running on the same thing, we all use the same currency, it's called electricity, the one thing you own that doesn't use that is your car. And it is the one thing that you are probably the most anxious about fueling. You're the most aware of the price of it. You don't think about the price of electricity when you turn your laptop on because we've made it cheap enough that it works out. And so this is just a good time to think about that, of how much pain and suffering and difficulty is caused by the need to get this stuff out of the ground constantly. We are always building new infrastructure. We are always drilling new wells. We're always shipping this stuff all over the world. And like, we can break that cycle. And the way to do that is to move to renewable energy, powering an electric car. Right now, your car might not be fully powered by renewable energy, but it can be. And your gas car never can be.
Never.
Or it can be, but biofuels are like a bajillion dollars and whatever. And so, yeah, it's just a good time to remember that, like, we're doing this not just for environmental cleanliness, but also stability. You shouldn't have to worry about, I mean, let alone people in the United States, where at least our government is responsible for this in a major way. But like, people in Japan right now who are getting most of their oil through the Strait of Hormuz, like, their life just got way more expensive for something they had no control over whatsoever. And like, EVs are a way to break out of that. And I think that's
see,
the
Honda?
Most underrated thing. Yeah. No. Yeah. And yeah, so I think it's just a good reminder that, like, we're doing this for a reason, man. It's not just about making cooler cars. It's about, like, making a more sustainable future. And I feel like, hopefully, this causes people to remember, like, just how crazy and entrenched the gas infrastructure is. Because the trucks, I mean, you're the fuel in your gas station is delivered on a truck. It's not delivered by a pipeline in most situations. And so there's just a lot of moving parts to keep all of our cars fueled. And if we can just take those off the board, everything gets a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's the show. Thanks so much for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel, and check out all our latest coverage at InsideEVs.com. See you next time.